Blog Talk Radio.
You're now listening to
Hot Takes
with
Bertola and Eric.
Welcome to another edition of Hot Takes. I'm your host, Eric Nifong. I'm joined by the other host, Nolan Haig. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at @E_Nifong. He is at NJH09. And you heard it there. You heard the highlights of Jose Fernandez. And sadly, those are the only things that we'll be able to see anymore, as he, of course, lost his life on Sunday morning. So it was a pretty tough weekend. Lost a couple greats on Sunday, and other than that, we also had some great football. Might get to that, but we're going to talk some Jose Fernandez here tonight, and possibly some Arnold Palmer. So I guess we should start off. How was your weekend?
I'm sure like you, got kind of blindsided there Sunday morning. I kind of rolled over, looked at my phone, and, couldn't believe my timeline. I just kept thinking it can't be that Jose Fernandez. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, just completely blown away. It's just a terrible loss for baseball, for Miami, the Marlins, just everybody.
Yeah, I think just this past 24 hours is very telling, just how many people cared about the guy. She's 24 years old, just turned 24 a few months ago. And, definitely not something that you wake up and expect to see, but I saw it come across my timeline. I actually got a text from a friend kind of apologizing about it, and I didn't know what he was really talking about, and I got on Twitter, and I saw. And, it made for a tough Sunday morning. definitely you couldn't have said it better. Hard for baseball, baseball fans, Miami, the city of Miami, and the Marlins and his family, and just the things he had to go through to even get here, to be able to play the game that he loved, the things that he kind of went through. I'm sure everyone's heard it by now, but just rescuing his mom when he was trying to defect here from Cuba. Didn't even know it was his mom. He had the mindset to go rescue someone because he heard someone fall into the water. I think that just kind of shows the guy he was. I never personally met him, but I think just with what everyone and all the players in baseball and the way it's kind of affected them all, I think that just kind of goes to show what kind of human being he was.
Yeah, no, definitely. Obviously, all day Sunday and today, there's just been such an outpouring of grief and sorrow, and everybody talking about what a beloved person he was to everybody who he came across. Got all sorts of crazy stories just about what a great personality he was, how everybody, how he interacted with everybody and made everybody feel. It seemed like there wasn't really anybody that had any bad words about him. I mean, just you could tell he always was having fun out there doing what he loved. Definitely, like you said, he'd experienced enough life by the time he was 15 years old than most people do their entire lives. And he definitely seemed to cherish every moment.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think the most telling thing of that is just kind of the way Barry Bonds, of course, growing up, Barry Bonds was probably the greatest player of our generation growing up. But he was always kind of to the media, he didn't really answer questions. He acted like he was trying to get out of there as fast as he could, type thing, and was just, of course, got into it with some teammates. But the last game Jose pitched, of course, after the eighth inning, and he retired retired the last batter with runners on the corner in a 1-0 game. He Barry Bonds came up and hugged him and kissed him and just really showed a lot of love. Nothing you saw when he was a player. I mean, that could just come with age, but I think that had a lot to do with just kind of the things that Jose brought to the locker room. You saw, I don't know if you caught the game tonight. I watched the game tonight. It was rough to watch, but just the way it affected his teammates and sad story. He was a bright star for baseball.
Yeah, no, definitely tonight was very special. I obviously saw D. Gordon open up the game, actually standing in the right-handed batter's box to honor him, and then stepping over to the left side, and after a couple pitches, of course, hitting a home run, and I don't know, however many 300 and some odd plate appearances. ended up being completely in tears and breaking down by the time he got to home. It's such a heartbreaking scene, but just great that everybody wore his jersey tonight and that they're retiring his number. It's just all too soon. There's no man.
Yeah, he had the Hall of Fame in his grasp. I mean, he was putting up most of his numbers. I got a lot of these stats from a guy on Twitter, Ryan Spader. If you don't follow him, he's a great baseball statistician. But he had a bunch of stats here. Jose Fernandez had a 31.2% strikeout percentage. So it's pretty much striking out one out of every three guys that he faced in his career. No baseball player in history has a higher percentage than that. He's had the second most strikeouts per nine innings in baseball behind only Clayton Kershaw. We could keep going on here. If Nolan Ryan struck out batters as efficiently as Jose Fernandez did, he would have 7,043 strikeouts in his career. Just kind of things. I mean, that's kind of a little out there, but I mean, it just goes to show how dominant he was at such a young age. Came in 20 years old, just walked away. I mean, he just took the NL Rookie of the Year and really wasn't close. He was actually finished third in the Cy Young voting that year. Next year, he gets Tommy John, his elbow. He knew it immediately and had to come out and said his season was over. Said he was only hoping it'd be like a 6 to 8 week injury. Found out it was Tommy John, and he battled back, and he returned to form last year when he came back. And of course, this year he's dominating. He was in an NL Cy Young talks. He probably wasn't going to win it, but I think he was going to finish top five, top three, and it's tough. His number will be the first number retired in Marlins history, which I think is very deserving. Not for what he did on the field, because you could argue he didn't really have a long enough career to do much on the field, but Miami, the Cuban population, I think the best article I read all weekend was from Dan Lebatard, talking about the impact that it had on Miami as a community, and just Cubans and Cuban Americans, and how much they are in Miami, and how much they were able to gravitate towards Jose, and really like baseball, and really like the Marlins. I think that he was well on his way to a $200 million contract, if not more. And I think that that was the guy that the Marlins were going to hold on to, because they knew his value of his nationality. And, it's tough. It's going to be tough not having him every fifth day. And,
I mean, that's – it's definitely – it's just tragic. But I obviously, you said he probably wouldn't have a long enough career to have any like lasting legacy, I guess, in that sense. But that's the thing, is he was well on his way, and he was, and you could tell the talent was there. He wasn't going away anytime soon. He was constantly going to be at the top of pitchers in the major leagues. Just so terrible. Even this last game that he pitched was 8 shutout innings, 12 strikeouts, 3 hits, no walks. I mean, it's just elite stuff right there. And now it's gone.
Yeah, that was against Nationals, a team that he pretty much owned in his career. Daniel Murphy, I don't think ever got a hit off of him in his career. Few guys have never got a hit off him in his career. Justin Upton faced him 13 times, struck out 10 of those times. Ian Desmond faced him 17 times, struck out 12 of those times. He just dominated. 17 straight home victories, finishes his career 24-1 all-time at home, 1.49 ERA at home. That's the best by any pitcher in history at one ballpark. Yeah. It's tough, and yeah, tonight's game was just it was something I couldn't miss. I had to work, but I couldn't miss it, and I just put it on my phone and really watched it. It was hard to hold it together at times through it all, but yeah, D. Gordon, you mentioned he started off in the right-handed batter's box before he went to his normal side, the left-handed side. He actually stood in Jose's batting stance and took the same stride and wore Jose's batting helmet when he did it, and then hit his first home run of the season. Yeah, it's something special. They also had 16 base runners tonight. Yeah.
It's crazy how things can do that. But, yeah, it's just one of those things that it happens. I can't remember who it was that I saw, but just said that one day there isn't going to be a next day or something to that effect. And it's a cold reality, but one that I guess we all got to deal with.
Yeah, most definitely. He'll definitely never be forgotten in baseball. I just hope that one day we're talking about him, we can talk about the great things he did on the field and not this tragic event that happened, and just the impact he had on baseball. And I think kids playing baseball, he was one of those guys that kids kind of look to actually like baseball again, because he was one of those guys that made it seem fun, and he always wanted to be out there, and he was energetic, and he always was smiling. And I don't think there's a lot of those guys in the league, and he was definitely appealing to kids to want to play baseball. And he's going to be very, it's going to leave a hole in that aspect. And yeah.
Yeah, you can definitely already tell. The connections and the people that he touched. It's obvious and be very much missed.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're still waiting to kind of hear what completely happened. Cops, of course, said it wasn't alcohol or drugs found on the boat. Now, that doesn't mean that there couldn't have been any in their system. You'll have to wait for toxicology reports. But I just have to wonder, they said, Jeffrey Loria said that they had to confirm his address to confirm it was him. You just kind of wonder how bad it really was, because they couldn't identify him like that and had to use ID to identify him, or maybe it was just to double check. But bad situation, and definitely something you never want to wake up to. I remember when this happened with Daryl Kyle. I was really young, so I didn't really know what was going on and couldn't really process it. It's not every day that this kind of thing happens to athletes, and when it does, it just kind of strikes home that every day is valuable, and you should always tell the people around you that you love them, and you never know what could happen.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's definitely, yeah, it's kind of a reality check. People like to see, you know, athletes as kind of, you know, not
invincible
on another level, or yeah, invincible, or super, or whatever. I mean, and yeah, like you said, it's happened in the past. Guys like Derek Thomas getting in a terrible accident. I didn't really understand the gravity of that, or what exactly was going on when it happened. But yeah, it's just kind of too young to really fully grasp it. And it's just, yeah, it's definitely not an easy thing.
Yeah, definitely not. And I think that the Marlins are going in the right direction here. retiring his number. I think that's huge. And I think that baseball, the MLB is going to do something for him. I think that they're going to have a Jose Fernandez Award for most for player who kind of enjoys the game the most, or just something just something like that. Not necessarily,
yeah,
that, but something.
I did see
kinda,
something, a suggestion for something like that. I mean, it definitely, yeah, it would make a lot of sense and would be a fitting tribute.
Yeah. You'd like to see other things happen, but it just ended, and it's tough. It also, as far as baseball goes, it leaves the Marlins with a huge hole in their team, but mainly it leaves a huge hole in everyone's hearts. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, not really one of the first things you think about, but yeah, no, this definitely changes the franchise. I mean, this, in baseball terms, I mean, this is a guy that you were planning on building around for many, many years to come. I mean, an ace starting pitcher is the most valuable thing you can have in baseball, and yeah, and it's just so unfortunate.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people give the Marlins a lot of grief about the organization, and rightfully so. I mean, they trade away a lot of good players. When they moved to Miami, it looked like they were going to change things. They traded everyone after having a bad season. But, you know, there were reports all summer. Teams like the Red Sox, the Nationals, and the Dodgers offering their highest prospects for him, their top two or three prospects for him. I believe any other player, they would have accepted that trade. But I really think that the Marlins wanted to keep this guy because they knew what he could bring, and I think that having the combo of Stanton and Fernandez would have been good for their franchise to stay a competitive franchise for the next decade or so. And it's definitely going to be tough to replace him. But that's really the furthest thing that matters at this point.
Yeah, no, for the fact that he was good at his job was probably the, you know, was down on the list of reasons why he would, or reasons why we're, oh my God, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. But yeah, no, it's just a shame. In every way, lost a great person and a great talent, and I just don't know
yeah.
what else to say.
Yeah, me either. I just want to kind of I know that none of them will hear, but all the players in the league, I just loved how they all rallied together. Just seeing the images yesterday of most every team playing yesterday, hanging their own jersey of Jose Fernandez in their dugout. Yasiel Puig was doing it with tears in his eyes. He was interviewed after the game, and he couldn't stop crying. You had Poppy, who was canceled his celebration with the Tampa Bay Rays. To honor Jose, and he looked like a zombie during that time when they were standing out there for the national anthem and things. It just has to be so hard to imagine what's going through all their heads, because you know no matter what, no matter what team they're on, they're all a family, and never want to see anything like this happen.
Yeah, no, just a terrible thing that yeah, shouldn't happen to anybody.
No, definitely not. I guess, do you want to do 16 seconds of silence here, and we can kind of talk about some football if we're able to?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Well, we'll kind of try and transition here. After that, we did have some football games on Sunday. It kind of helped ease the pain a little bit when noon came around. You had that three or four hours. You had time to process everything, and there were football games, and the great thing about sports is they kind of are able to do that for you in times like this. We also, before Sunday, we had picks in college football. There were some pretty good games on paper. A lot of them didn't turn out very well, though. I guess
yeah.
We should start off here. Number 11, Wisconsin, traveled to Michigan State, number 8. And the Badgers had their way with Sparty. We both picked the Spartans in this one, but the Badgers never looked like they were in any danger at all. End up winning that one 30-6.
Yeah, no, it started out pretty boring. Big Ten game, kind of low scoring, but Wisconsin was playing good defense all game, and eventually they started scoring on their own. Had a big fumble return in the third quarter, kind of put things on ice.
Yeah, most definitely. I actually I didn't catch much of that game. I was watching whatever game was on ESPN at 11. I don't remember what it was, but Wisconsin definitely didn't look looks really good. Two top 10 wins already on the season, and now this week they will be going for their third one. So we'll have to see a big time matchup down in Ann Arbor. So we'll be talking about that here in a little bit.
Yep.
But then at 2:30 we had an SEC clash, Florida and Tennessee. It looked like Florida was going to run away with this one, had a 21-0 lead, took a 21-3 lead into the half. But Tennessee outscored them 35-7 in the second half. Josh Dobbs really woke up. The offense really woke up. And Florida, their defense just kind of fell apart. When it started to happen, it just snowballed. And you could kind of tell that Florida was in a lot of danger if you're watching that game. And Tennessee might be for real. I know they've had a couple close calls here, but either the SEC is pretty weak this year other than Alabama, or Tennessee might be for real.
Like you said, Florida got up. I kind of checked out. I wasn't really paying attention anymore. And then, next thing you know, Tennessee's got the lead. And, definitely a slow start, like as far as how they look. But Tennessee, they could be onto something if they can continue playing better every week. Josh Dobbs looked great in the second half, just putting up touchdowns like he's Lamar Jackson or something. But
nobody.
It's definitely the East is wide open. It's pretty much seems like it might be theirs to lose, but. We'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, definitely. They have a big matchup with Alabama here in a few weeks, and we could see a rematch at the end of the season, however that game goes. But still a long way to go here. I think that their passing offense is going to have to get a little bit more consistent. Other than that, I think this team could definitely be right there at the end of it.
Yeah, and a little bonus hot tweet for you about this game. Saw a tweet after the game that said, congratulations to Tennessee for doing something that every other team in the SEC East has done in the last decade.
Beating Florida?
Yes.
All right. Well, they were the last ones to jump on there, so
yeah,
never too late, though.
No, I
think we had another. Yeah, I think we had another SEC matchup here, Arkansas and A&M. I also want to point out I picked Tennessee in that game, and you chose Florida. The only pick I got right all week.
Here's the only pick you got right. Yep.
A&M and Arkansas here. I had Arkansas. You went A&M. A&M, they look really good too. End up winning that one 45-24. I don't know if that was as much of how good A&M is or if Arkansas. I was never really sold on Arkansas. I did go with them because I was more not sold on A&M. But Trevor Knight looks really good. And A&M, yeah, they have
right.
some of the best pass rushers in the nation.
Yeah, no, I kind of said, it kind of fits into the narrative that I had last week. That they're doing just enough to win, they're obviously better than Arkansas. I think they've beaten Arkansas five straight times now. Might be wrong on that, but Trevor Knight had some big plays, touchdowns at 92 and 48 yards, and that 92 one kind of broke the tie later there in the second half. And like you said, there's a lot of dangerous guys on that defense. So Texas A&M, I guess, you know, maybe a sleeper. I wouldn't be too confident quite yet, though.
Yeah, I'm still not sold on being able to trust Trevor Knight every week. He had these games at Oklahoma. I think the biggest thing with him is being consistent. But if he is able to be consistent, he is a really good college quarterback, and A&M has a good shot if he is able to do that. So we'll have to see here as the season goes along.
All right. What was that last game? Panthers Vikings?
Yes, Panthers Vikings.
Did the Panthers show up to that one?
I think they did, but their offensive line is just pretty bad, and it really got Cam Newton rattled, and the Vikings defense is really good. Sam Bradford has this team 2-0 since he took over, and they're 3-0 overall. Kind of a surprise here to me.
Yeah, I saw maybe a few rumblings when the Sam Bradford trade happened that Sam Bradford actually might fit better into North Turner's offense than Teddy Bridgewater does. And, he definitely doesn't look uncomfortable. He's putting enough points up for that defense to keep the score down for the other team, especially, given Cam Newton's problems all day, the Panthers couldn't score after the first quarter. Minnesota, looks like they might run kind of a similar way that Denver kind of won last year and is continuing to win this year. It's just play really good defense and hope your offense does enough. And so far it's working.
Yeah, definitely, and Panthers are struggling right now, and I want to point out that my two Super Bowl picks at the beginning of the year, the Colts and the Panthers, are 1-2, so, yeah, which I'm bailing on my Colts pick already.
Okay, yeah.
They're pretty bad.
Well, I can still hold out some hope for the Packers, but my Patriots one's looking pretty good, if I may say so.
Well, I mean... Yeah, I'm probably going to say that, we'll probably have
And after watching the debate tonight, I'm going to extend my rename. I'm going to extend my Bill Belichick should be the Lombardi Trophy should be the Belichick Trophy. I'm changing my I'm extending that to Bill Belichick should actually just be president.
All right. I mean, it's probably a better choice than we got right now. So,
yeah, but
I'll vote for Bill.
Those debates were crazy. Anyway, do you have an upset?
Yes, I had Oklahoma State and Baylor. Didn't get it. Baylor just scored enough points in a shootout, which was really a turnover-filled shootout. But yeah, not a good pick.
Yeah, well, mine was I picked the Jags over the Ravens. That didn't happen, even though there was many opportunities for the Jags to win that game. There's like a bunch of picks at the end, just really sloppy. I don't know. The Jags are definitely in a bad place. There's supposed to be, you know, noticeable improvement this year, and so far there hasn't been. Most notable thing to come out of this game was Jalen Ramsey basically saying he doesn't have any respect for Steve Smith, which is just a bad move. Steve Smith will probably make you look silly at some point, but probably just one of the cases of I don't get this old man out of my face, but that's kind of a weird deal there.
Yeah, most definitely. It was not a good move probably by Ramsey in his third career game, but I like the attitude. I like the fight, but I'm pretty sure Steve Smith had seven catches for 90 yards.
8 for 87. Yeah.
Yes, 8 for 87. So, yeah.
Which is funny, because I think Jalen Ramsey said something about locking him down. I mean, which he didn't score a touchdown, and I guess didn't really have like a huge play or anything. But 8 for 87 isn't nothing. I mean,
yeah,
he was getting catches.
Yeah, and it's not like Ramsey is a corner and was covering him the whole game,
right?
But yeah, well, anyway. That wraps up our picks from last week. We both went 1-4. So with our last week of picks here, you still hold a 3-game lead. So I'm just going to have to go against you in all of our upcoming picks here.
Oh, all right. Well, do we want to just get to those then?
Yeah. First, do you got a hot tweet?
I wasn't able to write it down, but basically the gist of it was, if you're not a baseball fan, I cannot explain to you in 140 characters how special Jose Fernandez was. Either way, I thought it really kind of hit home.
That does. And mine is kind of similar here, talking about Jose Fernandez. This was actually tweeted by me to you. Back in 2013, and all it says is the Marlins are debuting their 20-year-old phenom Jose Fernandez tomorrow, and
if there's any person I could credit you for being on top of from day one, it was definitely him. You were all about it from the get go. Probably from when he was drafted. You were definitely right. You knew what was coming.
Yeah, he just had it. I think you always know when a guy has that special thing, and you can really point it out. Some guys develop it later in their careers, but some guys just have it right off the bat, and he was one of those guys.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I guess that brings us here to our hot picks this week. I did want to talk a little bit about the Eagles and the Chiefs, but we had more pressing issues to talk about here. But I do want to point out that the Wentzwagon is well on its way. And how about
still
the Eagles having the best? Yeah, and how about the Eagles having a top three defense in the league? Not something I expected when the season started.
No, we'll definitely be able to have more conversations about this. He's looked pretty good so far.
Yeah, most definitely. And also, my hot take was right last week. Said he wouldn't have a turnover once again, and he did not. He actually broke an NFL record.
Nice. Well, my hot take was also right because the Patriots won.
They did. Yeah, so we nailed it last week.
Yeah, we're on top of it, I guess. All right. Well,
all right.
Except for the picks, but.
Right, yeah. Let's get into those here. Number 7, Stanford, travels to kind of a surprising number 10, undefeated at 4-0 Washington team. That game's actually Friday night at 8 o'clock. Who you got?
Give me Stanford.
All right. I picked Washington in this one. I really like the way their quarterback has been playing.
All right. Well, let's hope David Shaw has a plan to not let that happen.
All right. Let's not hope that. All right. Next, we have number 8, Wisconsin, going to Ann Arbor. Number 4, Michigan, who had their own troubles against Colorado for a little bit. That game's Saturday at 2:30. Who are you taking?
You know, I picked against Wisconsin last week, but I'm going to have to pick against Wisconsin again. I'm going to take Michigan.
All right. I actually took Michigan, but I'm going to go Wisconsin here.
All right. That's the plan. Mess up your picks.
All right. Oh, yeah, you did on that one at least. All right. Next we have number 3, Louisville, number 5, Clemson. Huge game. Lamar Jackson has more TDs than 113 teams in college. Who you got?
This is a tough one. Obviously, you've got some high-profile quarterbacks. Clemson's coming off the get-right game. I'm going to have to go Louisville for
a
little bit of surprise.
All right, I actually took Clemson in this one. I think that they just have a little bit better of a team, but I expect a very close one in this one.
Yeah, as long as a lot of points are scored, everybody will be happy.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, Chiefs-Steelers, Sunday night. Both teams come in at 2-1, one off a big win and one off of a disappointing loss.
As much as I'd like to say that kind of laid out the blueprint to what the Chiefs need to do to finally have a complete offensive game. I don't know. I still don't trust this team. So I'm going to go with the Steelers.
All right. Well, I actually I took the Chiefs here. I think that Marcus Peters is going to get yet another interception because he'll be on AB, and we know how much Roethlisberger likes to throw to him. And Peters is a ball magnet.
I mean, he's definitely going to cover him at some point, but they tend to not shadow guys. I expect AB to be all over the place in the slot and probably just roasting everybody. As much of a ball magnet as Marcus Peters has shown to be, he's definitely still gets beat, and is still a young and experienced secondary that Ben Roethlisberger could easily take advantage of. Especially with a limited rush. Which